Okay, we're beginning here on the top of Ted Vavon Aleph at the two dots. The Gemara here is discussing the phrases that are in the Mishnah. Yesterday we finished off discussing the fact that B'nai Chorin and B'nai Brit come to exclude an Eved and an Akum. The Gemara has a Havamina that an Akum or an Eved would be kosher le'edut over here, which is interesting because generally they're not k'sherim le'edut. Why over here does the Gemara all of a sudden think that maybe they should be k'sherim le'edut? So just to wrap up from yesterday, that happens to be that the Rambam and the Rosh discussed this issue. The Rambam says, because if we would have thought, since when it comes to these issues of damage or injury that happens, it usually happens in a place where people are not found, but rather you have the Amei Aretz or the Avadim. Those are the people that are usually present when these types of items happen. So you would have a Havamina that we could rely on them for testimony here because they're the ones with the knowledge or information that we need. The Rosh formulates it this way, which is that since our objective over here is to get restitution to the Nizak, we would think that any means by which we can establish facts to get restitution, remuneration to the Nizak, we would take those steps, and therefore maybe we would permit testimony from a Eved or an Akum. And the Halacha, the Ramah brings down, he says, "V'chol elu psulim, psulim afilu b'makom delo shchicha nashim k'sherim la'id." Even if we can't find nashim k'sherim, nevertheless, you can't use any of these psulim as a dim. "V'chol ze medina," that's only a medina. "Aval yesh rimim takanat kodmim hu d'makom shein anashim regilim liot," in a place where men aren't, that you can use women. And seemingly from the Ramah, it would also mean psulim, that if there aren't k'sherim there, that we would rely on psulim in order to expedite compensation to ensure that people get restitution. And therefore, we would, mitakanat chachamim, allow such testimony, even though min din, we wouldn't. So it turns out, the halacha, that the havamina of the Gemara, that the Rambam and the Rosh explain, becomes a takanat chachamim in the end, in order to do exactly what we would have thought in the havamina. So even though midin, it's not applicable that the Eved and the Nachri would be believed in these cases. Nevertheless, it's takanat chachamim that maybe when there's no other option that we would use them, as well as the fact that we know that if he's mesiach lefi tumo, if we get information from them, not as edim, but rather simply if they're telling us information, and in that case, if we can verify that they are telling the truth, and that they are reliable individuals, we can rely on them if they're not intending to testify, but simply to give information, and we discuss that more in detail with regards to agunot, and the testimony of even Eid Echad or Eidim Sulim. In that case, there the Gemara says that if it's Mesiach Lefi Tumo, we can even rely on a Nachri. And that became, as we mentioned then, very relevant by the World Trade Center when they were trying to get evidence of the fact that people had passed away, which were done by labs that were obviously non-Jews involved. And therefore, the Beit Din had to go to those labs and ascertain through talking to them, not through Eidut, but simply engaging them in conversation to see the quality of their work and understand what they found in order to paskin with regards to the agunot. And now we're up to v'nashim bichlal ha-nezek. And women are a part of these dinim of nezek. Menahani mile. How do we know that is the case? I'm Rav Yehuda Merav, v'chein tana debei Rabbi Shmuel HaMakra. The pasuk says, ish o isha ki asu michol chatot. When it comes to the punishments, when it comes to onashim shebetorah, hishkva katuv isha l'ish l'chol onashim shebetorah. The Torah equates men and women to any punishment or any kapara that is attained through a korban in the Torah. The Bei Rabbi Elazar Tano, they learn it out from elu amishpatim asher tasim lifnehem, hishkva katuv isha l'ish l'chol dinim shebetorah. So that is an additional limud, which is el mishutim asher tasim lifnehem. Lifnehem seems to be all of Klal Yisrael. Anybody that it was present, you should present them these dinim, these laws, these torts from the Torah are applicable to everyone that is there. Even though the pasuk itself is interesting, as el mishutim asher tasim lifnehem, the Gemara in other places learns that lifnehem, based on the word Elohim that is used there, that it's speaking about dayanim, that the cases and the laws have to be done before a Beit Din of Jews and of Dayanim Mumchim. But here the Gemara learns from Lifnehem that there is a requirement that everybody be knowledgeable and aware of the halachot that are here. The Beit Chizkiyah, V'Rabbi Yosef Li, Tana Makra, V'Emit Ish O Isha, in the case where a man or woman is killed, that the person who kills them, or if your mamon kills them, you're responsible whether it kills a man or a woman. Now, as far as the Torah is concerned, as the Balei HaTosafot point out, the Torah is written in Lashon Zachar, because unlike English, there is no neutral gender in Hebrew. You have to pick a gender. The default gender in Hebrew is Zachar, Lashon Zachar. So just because it's written in Lashon Zachar wouldn't necessarily exclude women. It's only in a case where it says Ish. In particular, would you exclude a woman? And there you'd need a specific ribui to include women if the Torah uses the term Ish. But otherwise, when it has a Lashon Zachar, then we would assume that it's equally applicable to men and women. The reason we need these limudim, the Gemara is going to explain now why you would have thought there's an exception to the rule in these instances. V'tzricha, we need all three of these psukim. Again, we've seen this Gemara before a number of times. Di'ash me'inan kamaito, I've only had the first source, which is Ish o Yishak yasumi kol chotot. Hotam hu dechas rachman ala. There, the Torah has mercy on the individual. Keichi dehavi la kapara. So that they can attain atonement for what they have done. Therefore, the Torah allows them the right for korbanot, for punishment, in order to attain that atonement. Tosfot asks about the issue of onashim, which says that we equate men and women with regards to onashim. He says, v'im tomar, im lo hukshu l'inyan onashim klau, had there been no hekesh, koshkein davachas alatvei. Wouldn't have that been even more merciful of the Torah? Here we said that the reason that we want her to be equated by onashim is because chas rachman Allah. The Torah had mercy on her so that she could attain atonement. He says, well, if the Torah wanted to have mercy on her, then wouldn't it even be better if there were no onashim at all? She wouldn't get punished at all? Meaning that if you want to talk about kapara, and that's chas rachman Allah, if you really want to be chas, say that there should be no punishment whatsoever. That'd be real mercy on her. So why would you say that that is chas rachman Allah? So Tosafot says, v'yish lamar, de'itzrichra l'onashim aktuvim behedya. You need that for punishments that are written explicitly. B'nashim k'gon arayot, she'esh len kapara. That was what you were mentioning before, that the mitzvot in which women are chayavot, and the onashim apply to them, then they do need kapara in those instances. So, alright, in mitzvot where they're not obligated, or mitzvot that maybe they wouldn't have been obligated because we don't know, there you could argue maybe that chas rachman Allah means that not only is she exempted from kapara, she's exempted from onesh whatsoever. Tosafot says, but you still have a slew of mitzvot where women are explicitly included, and therefore the Torah's granting of kapara to the woman helps her in those instances, and that's why it's called chas rachman Allah. Aval dinim, talking about civil laws, ish debar maso matan in, a man who is a person who goes out into the business world, one who's involved in transactions, he would be subject to those rules. Ishalo, the woman who's not involved in those situations would not be subject to those laws. V'yashmin and dinin, and if you taught me about the dinim, saying that men and women are equal, kehechidavi lachiyuta, give the woman the opportunity if she does engage in business, say she's an almana, she's a grusha, for whatever reason she has to engage in business, then she should have the ability to be governed by the laws here so that people will transact with her. So that's why you would have an equation of equality between men and women with regards to dinim, aval kapara, but when it comes to kapara, ish debar mitzvah, man who is chayav in mitzvot, fully obligated in the mitzvot, therefore you wouldn't have the ability to attain kapara for the woman because in some sense she may not need that atonement because she's not as obligated in the mitzvot. So the necessity for atonement is much less because of the fact that she is not obligated in all the mitzvot. And if you taught us these two, hachamishum kapara v'hachamishum chiyuta, one case to give her the ability to attain atonement, and the other case to give her the ability to transact, be involved in business matters so that she has the civil laws apply to her. Aval the inyan k'tala, maybe here by death, ish debar mitzvah, l'shalem kofer, isha lo. So here, ish debar mitzvah, Rashi says, m'shalem balashur kofer liyoshim, mishum debat lemi mitzvot. Because he caused them to desist from mitzvot. prevented them from accomplishing the mitzvot. You would have thought in the case of kofar, the Baal HaShur pays kofar the Yorshim when the Shur kills someone. So you would have thought that that was limited to men who are, quote-unquote, bar mitzvah, that they are obligated in all the mitzvot, and therefore causing them to desist from doing mitzvot is what obligates the punishment to the kofar over here. That for women is not. So therefore you would pay kofar only when your animal killed a man, inshallah, but when you killed a woman, that would not be the case. So I need all three of them for that reason. Again, the first case, I need you to tell me about the onashim and the korbanot to tell us that the woman has the ability to attain kapara. But maybe civil law and the dinim would not apply to her because she's not involved or engaged in transactions in business. If you just told me dinim, we would say the fact that she needs to be involved in transactions in order to support herself, so therefore she has equal status there. When it comes to kapara, then she would not require kapara because she's not as obligated in the mitzvot. Then we had the kofar, or the fact that if you kill a man and a woman, it's equal. That comes to teach us that you don't just need kofar for killing a man. You need kofar for killing a woman as well. If you only taught me the din of kofar, mishum de'ika ibud nishama. Okay, maybe you didn't kill someone who's obligated in all the mitzvot. You still cause a loss of life. So therefore, restitution, kofar, atonement is appropriate. The other two cases where there's no loss of life, maybe she would not be equated. Therefore, we needed all three of these sources to equate men and women to know that a woman has equal status for all of these matters. That's with all punishments, that's all kapara, all civil laws, dinim, as well as if they are killed, then the person who kills them is equally responsible, whether it's a man or a woman. Right now, Gemara moves on to the next, Nizak v'mazik b'tashlumim. The Nizak and the Mazik are equated in the payment. So that the Gemara is going to come back to. It's first going to introduce a machloket amuraim. And after it talks about the machloket amuraim, it's going to come back and try to fit this into the Mishnah, which is v'itmar palga nizka. When it comes to the half nezek that you pay when it comes to a tam, a shor tam that does damage, v'papa amar memona, v'papa says it's a monetary payment, v'funa b'redu yivshua amar knosa, that it is a penalty or a fine. V'papa amar memona, v'papa says that it's a monetary payment, kasavar, he believes, stam shvarim, lav b'chezkit shimur kayamin, that your default shor does not have proper coverage or protection. Ubedinu the Baalei Shlumei Kulei. And therefore, if it goes out in damages, you should be fully culpable and responsible. Rachmanu the Chasalei. The Torah had mercy on the individual. Takati lo yaye Torah, because we haven't seen this behavior in a repetitive manner. Therefore, the Torah gives you some leeway in order to deal with it. I'll explain that in a second. Rav Huna b'Rei d'Rav Yehoshua Amar, Knoso. He believes that it's a fine or a penalty. Kasavar stam shvarim b'cheskat shimur kaimei. It seems to be the default status of a shor is that it is domesticated. It doesn't do this type of damage. Ubedinu d'lo l'shalim kla. And technically, he should be off the hook completely because he shouldn't have expected this. And the fact that it happened is an onus because there's no reason for this animal to go out and do damage if it's domesticated. The Torah imposed a fine or penalty on him in order to encourage him to watch the animal and to take care of the animal. So this is otherwise what's known as a machloket with regards to the nezek of tam, a shor tam. Is it palga nizka mimona or palga nizka kenasa? Is the half payment that you're making a monetary payment? Is it part of the restitution for the damage that's done? Or is it kenasa, or is it a fine, because technically you're not obligated to pay anything. But here we impose the fine in order to encourage you to behave differently. We're trying to adjust the behavior, therefore we have a kenas that's imposed here. So now, what is the machloka here between Rav Papa and Rav Huna b'Rei d'Rav Yehoshua? Seemingly from the Gemara, and that is the way that the Baalei HaTosafot read it on Tevarim Amud Bet. V'ashtad amar palga nizka kenasa, that he seemingly reads something similar, which is a machloket in mitziyut. It's machloket in the facts. are shvarim. What is the status of these oxen? Is their default status that they are domesticated, calm animals, and therefore you would not expect them to behave in an untoward manner? And so when they do, you are surprised, caught off guard by that. Therefore, you're not chayav because you're an ones. You couldn't have expected, you couldn't have anticipated this, and therefore you're not obligated to pay. We fine you in order to encourage you to behave differently now, or to start watching it, even though technically it's domesticated, and therefore it's palka niska kanasa. The other hand, the other opinion of Rapapa believes that it's palka niska mimona. Rapapa is saying that the stam shvarim do have a problem. They do get engaged in these activities. They do get into these problems. And because they get into these problems, you are chayav, because you should have watched it. Ah, the Torah gives you a little leeway here, because otherwise it would be impossible to live. This is too common, too much of an imposition on the individuals. Make them pay full payment all the way in the front before they really know and understand what's going on. So therefore, we give you a little break and say pay half, even though you're really technically chayav for all the compensation. That's what Tosafot says. It's really, in a sense, a machloket in mitziyut in the facts here. The reason that it might be confusing, or why you would have a machloket in mitziyut, is because it's hard to establish the empirical evidence over here. Because we know there are certain shvarim that are wild and that do this or act in this way. There are other shvarim, or maybe even the majority of shvarim, that don't act in this way. So it's hard to know when you have a shore that acts in this manner. Is it acting in this manner because it's of that class of shvarim that are wild? Or is it acting in this manner because the class of shvarim in general is wild? And so therefore probably it was hard to establish that empirical evidence. And therefore you have a result in a machloket in the mitziyut. All right. The other possibility, which of course mefarshim and the achronim gravitate towards, because we don't like having machloket in mitziyut, because then we just say, pokhazi, go see what the situation is. We explain why that may not be so easy in this case. The Shita Mekubetzin, on the other hand, seems to have the machloket revolve around the nature of the relationship between you and the object, which is, do we view a shor as a mazik? Is that an object that damages? And therefore, you have an obligation to watch or guard the mazik. And if you don't do that, and the mazik goes out and does damage, you're responsible for the nezik that's created. Or do we say here that the animal is not determined or is not classified as a mazik, but there's an obligation on the balim to ensure, to do a shmirah, to ensure that the animal doesn't turn into a mazik, doesn't become a muad. So then the failure would be different in these cases. If the animal is deemed to be a mazik and you're supposed to watch it and you fail to watch it, then we're going to say that you're obligated to pay. The Torah was chas alecha and made you only pay half, but you still should be obligated to make restitution because you let a mazik get out. On the other hand, if the shor itself is not a mazik, but rather it is an animal that needs to be watched, and why you're asking to watch it is so that it doesn't get into this habit or behavior where it does damage, I mean, it doesn't switch from a tam to a muad, that's the obligation to watch it. Your failure in that case doesn't necessarily require restitution. It means that we're going to penalize you for not watching it properly, but there's no hezek that's created by a mazik there because the animal's not deemed a mazik until it reaches a muad. And that might be the difference. That's the way the Shita Mekubetzet formulates it, that it's a difference in whether the shor is deemed to be a mazik or whether the shmirah here is simply to prevent it from becoming a muad. All right, so now what I want to speak about here a little bit is to give the context. I heard this from Rameer Lichtenstein. I think it's very helpful to look at this in this context when you bring it into the modern era and try to understand what's going on here with the Shor Tam and what the challenge the Chachamim were presented with. We have the same situation today, which is when people drive cars. When people get into a car and they drive a car, we know that there are risks involved with their entering into a car. They can do damage. They can damage property. They can damage other cars. They could, unfortunately, possibly, chas v'shalom, kill someone else, injure someone else. Getting into a car is a dangerous endeavor or undertaking. That's number one. On the other hand, there's a huge convenience factor and almost a necessity, a life necessity for people to have cars and drive around in cars. So we have to find a balance between allowing people to drive their cars and move around with the knowledge that there might be damage, there might be issues that come up. Not necessarily even intentionally. Not necessarily because they did something bipshia. They were negligent. Sometimes accidents happen. So what do you do in the case? We want to allow everybody to drive, but we also want to protect people from being injured or damaged in those cases. So the modern day solution to that problem is insurance, which is that you're not allowed on the road without insurance. Because if you get on the right road without insurance, you are now endangering everybody else. Not because the mere fact that you're driving without insurance makes you dangerous. It's the fact that we as a society have agreed that we're going to let people on the road once they have insurance, because that's the way to mitigate the possible damage or accidents that can happen when someone enters into a car. So insurance is the way that we balance that off and allow people into a car. In the same way, if a person acts inappropriately, they'll get a ticket. And then, once they get a number of tickets, then their license will be suspended. We no longer want them on the road. So we give people time. Obviously, people make mistakes, judgment mistakes, and so on and so forth. And so when they get a ticket, it's a warning that you can't behave in this way. You, on a numerous occasions, act in this manner. You've stopped being a driver that we want on the road. You're a driver that we prefer doesn't get on the road because your risk is too high. The damage that you cause is now exceeding the value or the benefit of having you the ability to drive. So in the same manner, they had to deal with it in their time with the shvarim. Shvarim are the equivalent of cars. Meaning that the shvarim were how they moved items. They were shvarim around on the street all the time going about. To say that anytime your shore does damage, you're going to be fully responsible will make it almost impossible for people to live. That means as if you can't get behind the wheel of a car because you might do damage. That's the same thing here. We can't let the shvarim out on the street because they might do damage. They might injure other people. So the way that Chazal dealt with it, they didn't have the insurance pool or insurance. So what did they do? They created a situation in which we give you, right, a certain frame in which we allow you leeway, which says that you shouldn't expect. And we don't expect these animals to do damage, but there are times when it does. And so in order to facilitate the ability of people to have their shvarim and to work and to do the normal things that people do, we said in those cases there'll be chatzi nezek. If it recurs over and over again, it's the equivalent of a suspended license. You no longer have a domesticated shore here. You have a problematic shore. Now we're going to obligate you to either keep them off the street or to watch them in a much careful manner. So again, maybe insurance is a better way to deal with it today, but in their day, they didn't have that concept or a way of dealing with it. So chatzi nezek is the equivalent. It's a way to facilitate society's ability to function, but still incorporate the risks that are involved with that functioning society. So chatzi nezek was that balance in order to deal with it. This could fit into either opinion. You could say that technically you should be chayav from day one. The reason that we don't make you chayav is in order to facilitate people's ability to take their shvarim out. Or on the other one, you could say that you should be patur on day one, but we want people to understand that when you engage in society and bring your shore out, that you have to be more careful. You can't just let it roam free. You have to take a certain amount of responsibility, even though we're allowing you to bring it out. Even though we're allowing you to engage the shore in regular activities, you still have to take more caution. And so it could work in whether it's paganizka mamon or not paganizka kanasa, but understanding in this manner makes it a little more palatable to understand why would you even get involved, and it's chatzi nezek. Because, again, you want people to do normal things, but you also want to prevent them from causing other people so much damage that it's not worth their ability or facilitating their ability to utilize the shore. So now the Gemara says, Tanan, our Mishnah, and this is why this is brought down here, Hanizak v'amazik b'tashlumim. The Nizak and the Mazik share in the payment, the restitution. Bishlam adamandamar palganizka mimona. If you say that the obligation here is a full obligation, and then you're only paying half, haynu the shayach nizak b'tashlumim. Then I understand our Mishnah. You have a case where both the mazik and nizak are making contributions, in a sense that there's a loss to both parties. The mazik is losing money because he's got to pay 50% of the damage that he did. The nizak is losing money because he didn't get the other 50% he was entitled to. But that's true if you say paganizka mamona, that you're really obligated for the full amount, and we discounted it down to 50%. Alamandamar paganizka knasa, according to one who says it's a fine, hashta delavdi de shakil, bitashlumi ite, over there he's getting more than he deserved in the first place. Technically, you're not deserving of any payment. The Torah imposed a fine on the mazik, so now you're getting more money than you deserved. How can you call it that the nizak is contributing over here? He was otherwise entitled to nothing. So now that you're giving him money, doesn't mean that he's losing money. He's actually gaining. The 50% he got is just a gain to him. Lo nitzrucha ela pchat nevela. Now we need it for the pchat nevela, which we already saw the limud for this before, which is that the diminution in value of the nevela is the responsibility of the nizak. So he's the one who has to deal with the carcass. And if the carcass, from the time that he has access to it, starts to fall in value, that is his loss. Where it says, Pchat Nevela, Hatani Le Resha. Well, Pchat Nevela, we know about that because we already had that limud from the previous Mishnah, which is Tashlume Nezek, Lamecha Balim Mitaplim Bnei Vela. That he only has to make restitution here, Tashlume, to make up the difference. The difference between what it was worth alive and what it's worth when it is dead. He said he only has to make compensation for that value above the nevela, which means that the nizak, the person that was the victim of the injured party here, is the one that has to deal with the nevela. We know that already. Chada b'tam v'chada b'muad. It's teaching us two different cases, the case of tam and the case of muad. In both cases, the injured or damaged party is the one who is responsible to deal with the nevela. But Tzricha, I need you to tell me both of these. By the tam, because he's not yet a muad, that's why we say that the nizak deals with the nevela, because we're less making the mazik less culpable there. About muad, by the muad, maybe we'll say he'll be fully responsible, not only for the damage, but even to deal with the nevela. Maybe over there, because he's paying the full amount, we're nice to him and say, you don't have to deal with the nevela. About tam, where you're only paying chatzin nezek, maybe we'll say that the nevela is the responsibility of the mazik. So, imalo, so there maybe we'd say not. Tzricha, that's why you need both of them. Now, what's interesting here, the Baal HaTosafot take it up, as well as all the other Rishonim, is that how can you call pchat nevela being the contribution of the nizak? Because what you're saying is that he gets 50% of the payment, and then he loses some of it because of the nevela that he has to deal with. The truth is that he's not entitled to any of that 50% to say that the Pchat Nevela is a discount on the amount that he's getting paid. So what all the Rishonim, you can see this in the Baal HaTosafot over here, it says, Afagav Dishaka Lavdidei, even though he's getting more money than he deserved in the first place, he's supposed to get zero. Now he gets 50%. Whether he gets 50% of the Nezek, or he gets 50% minus the diminution in the value of the carcass, he's still getting more money than he deserved. What contribution is he making at all? So what Tosafot says is that, since the Torah already entitled him to a payment of chatzin nezek, we then, once the Torah has given it to him, we already assume that that's the full amount he deserves. Now, if you deduct from that amount, or you reduce that amount, we consider it a contribution of the nizak. So even though, again, whether he gets 50% or 45%, he's still getting more than he deserved anyway, we still consider that 5% or that reduction in value a contribution of the nizak, since once the Torah entitled it to him, in a sense, it gets a shame tashlumim to him, and therefore, this is considered to be a deduction or contribution of the nizak that he has to deal with the nivela. Now the Gemara says, tashma. The Gemara here is going to bring down different Tanaic works to try to determine who's right. Is it palga nizka mamona or palga nizka kenosa? Ma ben tam lemuad. What are the differences between a tam and a muad? Shatam mishalem chatzin nezek migufo. A tam pays half nezek out of its body. Umuad mishalem nezek shalem min aliyah. On the other hand, muad pays full value out of the possessions or net worth of the individual who owned him. The im ita, if you're right that this also exists, let nenamiha. You should also put this in the difference, which is tam is paying knas. Muad is paying mamon. That's the difference between them. Tam enu mishalem al pi atzmo. Muad mishalem al pi atzmo. Therefore, the outcome of that is, if Tam pays kenas, mode be kenas is patur. Someone who admits to doing something when there's a kenas, he is then exempted from that payment. So if a Tam is kenas, then if someone admitted to his shor doing damage, and it was a Tam, he'd be exempt from payment, because it'd be mode be kenas patur. Now then, by a muad, if you admit to it, you're going to make payment or restitution because you just obligated yourself in that case. But that would be a difference between tam and muad, is whether you can exempt yourself by admitting to the damage. That would be a distinction, whether it's knas versus muad, which is mamon. Tana vishier. The Tana that brought those distinctions between tam and muad was not an exhaustive list. He left out items. My shir, the high shir. What else did he leave out besides this item? Again, if he just left out that item, you can assume that it was intentional, and that's not right. If he left out other items as well, then you can argue that it was not an exhaustive list, and his leaving it out doesn't prove anything about his opinion on that matter. She'er chatzi kofer. He left out chatzi kofer, which is also a distinction between tam and muad. Now, obviously, this doesn't mean that you pay chatzi kofer. In the Torah, the parshia of kofer is only written by a muad. By muad, it says that you have to make restitution to the victim, and you have to pay kofer for the death of that individual. That is true by a shor muad. By a shor tam, it does not mention anything at all. We do not know what the rule is. So there are two possibilities. One possibility is you are completely exempt from kofar in the case of tam. The other possibility is that you pay chatzi kofar, which the Gemara assigns to Rabbi Yossi Aglili as his opinion, even though we never find explicitly in Shas that he says such a thing. But the Gemara has attribution to him of such an opinion. It brings it all the time. That Rabbi Yossi Aglili is of that opinion that there is chatzi kofar. Based on that, the Gemara says, if you believe that a tam pays no kofar, then that's another distinction between tam and muad, which is that if a muad kills, you pay kofar. If a tam kills, you do not pay kofar whatsoever. So that would be another distinction that's left out here. So it left that out. It also left out the difference of modeh v'knas patur, and therefore we have a number of items that are left out. Gemara says, imishum chatzi kofar lav shiro. Now, not necessarily that the Gemara is rejecting this as being left out, but it's saying, for the manda amar that palga niska mamona, this is not considered to be an item that's left out of the list, because Hamani, who's the author of that position, Rabbi Yossi Aglili, damar tam mishalim chatzi kofar, that the tam pays chatzi kofar, and therefore it's incorporated, or included in the fact that a muad pays full, and a tam pays half. So whether it's nezek, whether it's kofar, the same rules apply. Muad pays 100%, tam pays 50%. So it's incorporated in the difference that's already mentioned, and therefore it's not considered to be an exclusion. For the one who says palgan is gemamona, nothing was left out of the list because of the fact that kofar has the same dinim as nezek. But you'd have to hold like Rabbi Yossi Aglili, who's a dat yachid, which, as the poskim point out over here, it is a dat yachid, and that would be a dochak to set it up as a dat yachid. What the Raivin says over here is that so is Tana Mashiach. The answer of that the fact that Tana didn't give an exhaustive list and left things out is also a dochak answer. So the question is, which dochak do you want to use? Tana Mashiach or dat yachid? So here the Gemara says we'd rather set it up as a dat yachid and not have it be that there's something left out of the list than say that there are things that are left out of the list. And that's why the Gemara gravitates towards this dat yachid to say that there is nothing left out of this list. Here, there's a very large tosfot that goes through a number of other items about this din of chatzi kofar, saying that aren't there other differences over here, whether they're patur, when there is skila, so on and so forth. He answers those questions, and in the end, he brings what I mentioned to you before, that where does Rabbi Yossi Aglili ever say this? And then he says, in the end, Yishlamar hadakamar atam mishalim chatzi kofar la mishum tishmin and lehachi, not because we heard it explicitly from Yossi Aglili, elaklomar matzi sober de mishalim chatzi kofar. He has the possibility of having such an opinion based on what we know about what he says in other locations. So you could conclude that he has that opinion, not that necessarily we have it explicitly anywhere. And then Tosfot brings that there are other people that you could have set this up with, like, and he mentions here, Rav Shimon ben Zoma, who has a opinion later on that also would solve this problem. So he's saying that the Gemara just brought an example of a dat yachid that could fill in the problem, but there are other Deot yichidot that could have been used here to solve the problem. Tashma, hemit shori et ploni, o shoro shel ploni. My shor went ahead and did damage, and it either killed someone, or it killed someone else's shor. Harizeh mishalem al piyatzmo. He pays based on his admission. Well, if shor is a knas, then you wouldn't pay on your own admission. So Gemara says, my lav betam. Now here we're talking about a tam, and nevertheless he pays based on his own admission to the killing of someone else or to the killing of another shor. So that would be an indication that it's palga, niska, mimona, that it's really a monetary payment. Lo, bimuad. It's talking about a muad. Aval tamai. So what would be the din by tam? Hachanami, dein mishalim, piatzmo. He wouldn't have to pay based on his own admission when it comes to tam, because that would be modeh biknas. Where it says, ihochi, if that's the case, then, adatani seifa, in the latter half, when it says, emit shariat abdosha ploni, my shor killed so-and-so's eved kanani, Ein mishalem al piatzmo. There he doesn't pay on, by his own admission, because when Yeshua kills an Eved, there's a fixed payment to the Torah of 30 shekel. That fixed payment is clearly a knas, because it has nothing to do with the value of the Eved Kanani. It's simply a penalty that is imposed, that you pay 30 shekel no matter what. Therefore, it's modeh b'knas and spatur. So here, the Mishnah draws a distinction between a case of nezek to an adam or a shor, versus nezek to an Eved Kanani. Well, if you say to me that the difference between mu'ad and tam is similar, then liflog v'nitnei b'didei. You could have made a finer distinction over there and said, b'med dvarim amurim b'mu'ad. What is that true that you pay on your own admission? That's when your animal is a mu'ad. Aval b'tam, enu mishalem al piatzmo. So that by a tam, well, you wouldn't pay on your own admission, and that'd be a finer distinction to make rather than saying, oh, whether it kills a person or a shor versus killing an eved, you could have made it even tighter. They can kill the same people, and the din would be different, whether he was a mu'ad or a tam. Why didn't it say that if you're right? It says, kula b'mu'ad kamari. That Mishnah's not dealing in tam at all. It's dealing in mu'ad, so tam is not a relevant case or a relevant topic in the Mishnah, and therefore it only spoke about mu'ad, and it doesn't bring that distinction, not because it's not true, but simply because it's not relevant to the topic over there. Tashma. Anybody who makes compensation in excess of the damage that they have caused or they did, then you don't pay by your own admission, because basically what the statement is saying here is, what's the definition of a knas? Definition of a knas is a penalty that has no connection to the value of the damage done. And therefore, it could far exceed the damage that's done, and you'd still have to pay it. That's called a knas. If it's a knas, and you don't pay, I'll pay out smoke, because it's mother be knas is patur. My love, hai pachotu ma shezik mishalein. Right now, the way that the Gemara is looking at it says, if you pay in excess of the value, that's a knas. Implying that if you pay less than the value of the nezek, that is not a knas. Lo, hakama shehizik mishalein. No, that's not the right way to read it. The right way to read it is, if you pay equal to the damage that you cause, that is called mamon, that's not a fine. Aval pachot mai, if you pay less than the value, what's the din? Hachanami delo mishalim, so too there you wouldn't pay if you were moded b'knas, because that is called a knas. A knas is either the fine exceeds the value of the damage you cause, or it is less than the value of the damage that you cause. Yochi adatani, if that's the case, instead of saying zaklal kol mishalim yoter amash ezik enu mishalim al piatzmo, rather than saying it in the form where if you're paying more than the damage that you did, that is a knas, litnei zaklau, kol she'inu mishalem kamashe ezik. We'd have a simpler language which says, whoever pays not in accordance with the damage that they did, that is called a knas, and if you were molded in that case, you would be patur. Tamashma pachol, tamashma yoter. That would incorporate both in excess or less than the amount of the damage. It would be a better way to formulate the statement. Tiyufta. That is a strong refutation against the position of Huna Brei of Yeshua, who says that Tam is a case of Mode B'Knas, and you'd be Paturka as Palga Niska Knosso. Over here, the indication on the Mishnah is a Knas is only when you're paying in excess of the value, not when you're paying less. What's an example of less? That's Chatzi Nezek. So if you really believe that was a Knas, the Mishnah should have formulated it in a better way. The fact that it doesn't formulate that way, it seems to indicate that it's just not true. That palga niska is mamona, not knasa. Ve'ilchata palga niska knasa. After we refute that position, we say the locha is like that position. Mara says, tiyufta ve'ilchata? So now you refuted the position, and then you say the locha is like that? In, yes. Taimamai havia tiyufta. Why was it a strong refutation of Rehuna Breda of Yeshua's question? Mishum loktani kamosha ezik. Because they didn't put the language in that manner. Lo psikale. The reason it didn't use that language was because it doesn't always work. Kevin deika chatzi nezek tsrororot. There is a case where you pay chatzi nezek, and there everybody agrees that that chatzi nezek is mamon, that it's palganizka mamona. Tehilchata gemirala. We have a halacha de moshe misinaya misora de mamonahu. That it is a monetary compensation, not a knas, not a fine. Therefore, the Mishnah couldn't write it in that manner because it would be misleading. There are cases when you pay less than the damage done, and yet it's not a knas. And if you admit to it, you'd still be chayav. Over here, the Rashba discusses what exactly is the Hilchata Gemirah. is the halacha of Moshe Mitzrayim that you're responsible to pay when you have tzroruot that do damage. You have to pay chatzi nezek. And then we conclude that it's mamona, that we surmise, based on the fact that the Torah obligates you here, that that is a monetary compensation. Or does the halacha of Moshe Mitzrayim not only tell you that there is a chatzi nezek when tzroruot does damage, it also tells you that it's mamona? From the language in the Gemara, it sounds like that's the halacha of Moshe Mitzrayim. Also, that it's deemed to be mamon, even though the Rashba seems to favor the other opinion, which is the halacha of Moshe Mitzrayim is that you pay chatzi nezek by tzroruot, but mamona is a direct outcome. And that is because, how does tzroruot work? Tzroruot is when the animal is walking along and stones shoot out from underfoot of the animal, and then they do damage in someone's property. Because it's the koach of the animal, you would have thought maybe there's an exemption here. The Torah says you are responsible for that compensation. Not all of it, but at least chatzi nezek. The fact that it happened like regel, which is not mishuneh, which is not unusual, that would have made us conclude automatically that it is mamona. And therefore the Rashba says you don't need the halacha Moshe Mitzrayim to tell you that. Once the halacha Moshe Mitzrayim says you are responsible for that, we know you're going to, it's mamona, not knosso, because it happens in a normal way, derech hilucha, not in a derech mishuneh. The only reason by Karen you would think it's a knas is because it's derech mishuneh. It's unusual or unexpected behavior, and that's why you would have been exempt. And the fact that the Torah obligates you here shows you that it is a knas. Whereas by the case of regel, you should have been obligated. The Torah might have exempted you because it's indirect, because of its koach of the animal. The answer is no, you're still responsible. Once you're responsible and it's a normal type of damage, it would be mamona. That's why the Rashba believes that the halacha Moshe Mitzrayim is not saying it's mamona, but rather simply saying it, you're chayav. Once you're chayav, then it's automatic that it's mamona. Now that we established that palga nezek is knas, hay kalbo da'achal imrei, v'shunra da'achla tarnagola mishunahu. Therefore, when you have a case of a dog that eats what's a lamb or a sheep, or a cat that eats a chicken, that is unusual behavior for these animals. Now, the truth is it's not unusual for them to eat these items. What's unusual is that they kill these items in order to eat it. Below Magbina and Bavel. Therefore, in Bavel, we can't collect on this because we're not dan dine knasot in Bavel. They can only deal with monetary matters in Bavel. They can't deal with knasot in Bavel. Since this would be the equivalent of Karen, which is the animal acted in an unusual manner, unexpected manner. The dog killed a lamb. The cat killed a tarnagola chicken. Since that's unusual behavior, it would only be subject to chatzi nezek of Karen, which is a knas. And therefore, since we don't deal with knas in Bavel, we can't bring this person to din over this matter. And Tosafot the Shita Tov says that the machloket about palga nizka memona or palga nizka knasa is in Mitziyut, says over here, according to the one who says that it's palga nizka memona, that the baldim would be completely pturim over here. Because the reason that you're chayav by palga nizka memona by tam is because that the animal has a normal tendency to do damage. Just we have a certain dispensation over here to pay half. But that means if the animal acts in a way that is completely unusual, mishuneh, you would be patur the gamri, according to the one who says palga nizka memona. And that's what Tosafot says over here, that near the davka lamandamar palga nizka knasav, alamandamar palga nizka memona lo mechayev klal. Since Karen is not mishuneh, but rather orchei. And these cases are mishuneh, and therefore you'd be patur the gamre. Vani milei biravrave. Now that's only true when those animals are larger. Aval bezutre orcheu. If they're smaller in size, meaning that the lamb or the chicken are very small, it's a chick, then that's not unusual behavior for these animals, and that would be considered regular nezek, or the equivalent of, we call it shame. Because there it's normal for them to eat those items, rather than be toreif them, which is the case when they're much larger than them, which is that they're attacking the animals. Ve'itofis lo mafkinim minei. If the victim here grabs money from the perpetrator or the owner of the animal that did the damage, then we do not disgorge that from him. So that's how he can solve his problem, is since we will not deal with knas, we're leaving open a little bit to vigilantism, which is that if you go in and grab the money, then you're compensated because you grabbed it already and Beitin's not going to come and pull it away from you and take it back from you. Now, how that works is a major machloket mishonim. You can already see that in the Balei HaTosafot, where Rabbeinu Tam says, Omer Rabbeinu Tam, Dafka itafis hamazik atzmo. The only case or the only time this is true is when you grab the item that did the damage. The mazik itself is subject to this confiscation rule, which is that if you grab it, then we don't make you disgorge it, even though when you grab it, it might be worth more than the damage that's done, or that it might not even be worth all the damage that's done. But the chachamim were there were mekil, so that he can get at least some restitution that you can grab the mazik, the animal that did the damage. Aval midachrin alo. It's not that his whole net worth or his estate is now exposed to you going in there and grabbing what you want. So that's the way that the Rabbeinu Tam believes, because otherwise what you're going to have is people are going to be real vigilantes, and they're going to go in there whenever they feel like it. They're going to end up stealing in some senses because they're going to take too much. They're going to grab things here and there. This is a special dispensation just to go after the item that did the damage in order to get your compensation or hold the person hostage to paying for the damage, and then you'll return the item to them. That is the belief of the Rabbeinu Tam. As you can see already, the Ot Aleph in the Gra says that's not true of other Rishonim, and that is, he quotes here the Rosh, but there are other Rishonim that also talk about this issue. The Rosh brings down the fact that V'lo Nira, D'lo Takantahi, this is not a Takana. What the Rabbeinu Tam is suggesting is that the Chachamim were Mekil, which means that it's a Takanat Chachamim that allows you to go grab the item. And the Rosh says that's not the case. Eladinu, this is Minadin, you're allowed to do this. Midoraita Mechayevle. Mina Torah, he is chayav to make compensation here. El she'en lo dayan b'bavel, she'kofeno li'tein lo. Problem is that in Bavel, we don't have someone who can exercise or adjudicate this issue, and therefore he's at the money. But technically, Mina Torah is owed the money. So his right to go and collect over here is not because the Chachamim allowed him. His right to collect is because he's owed the money. Now, we can't find someone to adjudicate it, therefore they can't go collect the money. So that leads you to a machloket within the Mishonim, which basically revolves around what generates the Chiyuv Knas. So there are the Rishonim, like Rabbeinu Tam and others, that are going to suggest, you have this, the Ramad and Muka Yosef, all of them say that what generates the Knas is Hamad Bedin. Until you're in court, a Knas is not an obligation. You don't get the Knas until Beit Din Paskins that you have a Knas. Therefore, if Bavel, where they can't deal with it, there is no Knas. You don't have any right to the Knas because you never ended up in a Beit Din. What we do is give you a dispensation to go after the Mazik, to go after the item that did the damage. That's a Takanat Chachamim, and that only applies to the object itself. On the other hand, for the Rosh, what generates the Chiyuv Knas is the damage that was done. You don't have to go to Beit Din in order to know that you're obligating the Knas. The Torah says you're Chayav in a Knas because this activity took place. Hamad of a Din is what gives you the right of collection to go after and get it. Or you can get Beit Din to help you. Basically, we give you the ability to use your own means to extract the Knas that you're otherwise owed. And so in the absence of Beit Din, we allow you to basically simulate what Beit Din would do, which is to try to compel the individual to pay what he owes you in terms of a Knas. This same machloka then persists into whether the person's entitled to grab just the Karen, or is entitled to grab the Kefel or Arba Avachamishar or other Knasot that lay on top of the actual damage that was done. The Rosh quotes from Varam Alevi Zal Kotov, Hada Amrina Nitofas Lomaf Kinamine, Hainu Davka Kashir Niske, Upatsir Miniske, that's only up to the level of the damage, or less than that. But then the Rosh himself writes, Velo Nira, Lidlav Takantahi, it's not a Takana as we said before, Eladinahu Midoraita, he's Chayam Midoraita, and therefore he can be Tofes, not only the Karen, but even the Kefel or the Arba V'chamisha. And again, this relates to the same concept that we said before, that the Rosh believes that there's a chiyuv midoraita of the Knas, irrespective of Beit Din. Whereas the other opinions are clearly seeing this as an institution, a takanat chachamim, because midoraita you're not chayav until there is a Beit Din that obligates you. And therefore, the takanat chachamim only dealt with the underlying nezek, not with the knasot that sit on top of it. Alright, so then the Gemara also says here that there is another exception to this rule, the fact that we aren't judging Knasot in Bavel. One exception is the guy goes in and grabs it himself. The other case is Iamar. He says, Kavali Zimna, that's Lina La'aretz Yisrael, Kavinanle. Comes in the Beit Din in Bavel and says, set me a court date in Eretz Yisrael. In Eretz Yisrael, they are Dan Knasot because they have Smicha in Eretz Yisrael. And therefore, you can ask them to set a date where you and the other party have to be in Eretz Yisrael. V'lo Azil. Then if the individual doesn't show up for that court case in Eretz Yisrael on that date, Mishamtinenlei, then we put him into Sham. Here, Mishamtinenlei probably means that we force him to make payments or we confiscate the property. I mean, it's not simply just we put him into Shamta and that's it. It seems like Beit Din actually takes action against his estate, and we'll see that from the next stage, which is we do, no matter what, whether he makes restitution or not, he makes payment, or the guy grabs the money, or they set the date in Eretz Yisrael, Beit Din still intervenes until he removes the damage that's being done, and that's what Rashi says here. We ask him to kill the mazik, because this animal now clearly is not just a domesticated nice dog or a cat. It's something that is injurious and is going to cause damage. And therefore, we require you to remove that damage. And if you're unwilling to remove the damage, then we're going to put you into Shamta. So even though you may not be obligated to pay, Beit Din, as the governmental authority that is trying to keep civility and proper operations of a normal society, they will impose on you the necessity to get rid of something that does damage. They may not be able to obligate you to pay for the damage you've done, but they at least can intervene to stop you from allowing that to happen in the future. And so Beit Din will intervene to prevent damage in the future. Then Amuka Yosef over here mentions that Chazal can impose this even if it didn't do damage yet, meaning that in this second statement that the person has ben kach or ben kach mishamtinenlei ad demisalek hezeka, that's even when it has yet to have had damage. Just the mere fact that he has something like that in his house, Beit Din can impose on him to remove that hezek from his house, even though it has yet to do any damage. It will also intervene in a case where they set a date in Eretz Yisrael and the guy fails to show for that date in Eretz Yisrael. Then they will also intervene in that case, because now the person has shown that they don't intend to pay, whether it's in Bavel or whether it's in Eretz Yisrael. It has nothing to do with the fact that Beit Din can't enforce a knas. This guy has no intention to pay whatsoever. At that point, Beit Din will intervene in order to get restitution for the victim or the injured party. So now Gemara says, how do we know that? Meet the Rabbi Natan. From Rabbi Netanya, Rabbi Natan Omer, Minayin Shlo Yigadel Adam Kelev Ra B'toch Beito, V'Yamid Sulam Ra'ua B'toch Beito. How do you know you're not going to bring up a bad dog in your house? Or that you can't put up a flimsy ladder inside of your house? Tamal Omer, Lo Tasim Damim B'Beitecha. You can't put, quote-unquote, blood in your house. Now this is with regards to Makeh, with putting a fence around your roof, which, again, we've discussed in the past. Putting up a fence around your roof is because if you have something where it's dangerous, like a flat roof where people can go on there and then fall off the roof, you're obligated to prevent damage from happening to other people. You have to put up a fence. As we discussed in many instances, if you have a pool, that is a requirement, right, to put up a fence to prevent people from becoming injured in the pool, just like you'd have to put up a fence around your roof if people go up on the roof. So it's a din d'oraita that you have to protect against injury from happening. What Rabbi Natan says over here is that it's not limited to these cases, but includes these other cases. That the Marsha and others discuss, what is the chiddush, what is being added over here that you wouldn't have known from the pasuk? The pasuk says, "Lotasim damim bebeitecha." You can't have things that are caused damage or problems within your household. So you would have thought the reason that makeh is required is for your own family, for your own household. That's why you put up a makeh. What Rabbi Natan is mechadesh is that it's not only for your own family. It's even for third parties, other people from the outside. You have to prevent injury to other parties. You have a kelev ra in your house. Usually the dog is fine with the household or the people that live there. It's comfortable with it. The only injury that's going to be done is to outside parties. So you would have thought maybe that's okay. Rabbi Natan comes along and says, no, that is not okay. That if it's going to injure other parties as well, that is problematic. And that's the chiddush that he's adding on from what we wouldn't have known from the case of makeh. That's what the Marsha says. Reb Soloveitchik says that the difference is between mita and nezek, which is that you would have thought from the din of makeh, you only have to take care of things where it can cause death. But in cases where it causes injury, maybe that's not subject to this din. That's where Rabbi Natan is mechadesh, that not only in cases of possible death, but even in possible injury, you are responsible to prevent that from happening. And therefore, you can't bring up a bad dog, quote unquote, or leave a flimsy ladder in your house, because those bring risks to other parties. And those parties are going to be not only killed, but maybe injured by these items. That's enough of a reason for you to be obligated midoraita to prevent it, or to not allow that item to be present in your house. All right, next Mishnah. Chamisha tamim v'chamisha muadim. There are five cases of tam and five cases of muad. Abehema Enu me'uedet, beima is not considered to be normal behavior. This is not considered to be something that you can expect from the animal. And here are the five tamim. Loli gach, not to gore. Loli gof, the gof is to give a body check with its heft, and that it bumps with intention to do hezek. Lola shuch, here is the bite, not to bite for the purpose of eating, but bite simply for the purpose of ripping or causing damage. Loli votes, here is to sit down with the intention of crushing what is below it. Loliv o, to kick, with the intention again to do damage. And those are five instances where they are tam, tamim, because this is unexpected, unusual behavior for the animal. And since that is the case, they are considered to be a tam, unless proven otherwise, until we establish they are muad. Hashain muedet le'echol et ha'ro'ila. With regards to Shane, then it is muad to eat items that it normally eats. You can expect an animal, when it eats food or feed that it normally eats, that it will eat that. Haregel muedet lishbor b'derech hilucha. A regel is the case where an animal, in its process of normal walking and transporting of items, it does damage in the manner that it walks, unintentionally, but that's something that you could expect. That's something that you will be held liable for in cases where it's in Mishuta Nizak, because that's something you could have expected. The Shor Amuad here is an ox that is not a tam anymore, but has already been done something repetitively. Therefore, it's considered now to be a mu'ad because it now has shown that that behavior is not unusual for it. B'shor ha-mazik b'shuta nizak. And a shor of the mazik that does damage in the property of the nizak. We'll see later on in the Gemara why that is the case, but it is seemingly, according to Rabbi Tarfon, we've seen before, who says you pay nezek shalem when the shor goes into the property of the nizak. V'adam. And a person. So here you have five mu'adin over here. You can see the distinction. By the tamin, it's called a tam. It's really all the same damage, which is keren, and the subcategories of keren. But there it lists out each of the behaviors, because each of those behaviors is unusual, and therefore that's considered to be a tam. Whereas by mu'ad, that is the expectation that you would do it. Once you're a mu'ad, the differentiation between the activity doesn't matter anymore. Because you've already established that this animal will do damage. Once you establish it will do damage, it doesn't matter how it does the damage. All of those will be considered normal behavior for the animal now. Therefore, those distinctions are not brought in the mu'ad pass. It calls it all shor mu'ad. Once it's mu'ad, it's no longer in any of those categories of tam. It's now upgraded itself to a mu'ad. Right now, the Mishnah continues. Hazev, v'ari, v'adov, v'namer, v'bardalas, v'nachash. So here you have a list of animals, which now clarifies for us that the animals that we're speaking about in the first part of the Mishnah are not like these animals. Though animals in the first part of the Mishnah are domesticated, calm types of animals, but they're animals that don't get that status. And that is a wolf, a lion, a bear, a leopard, a weasel, and a snake. Hari elu muadin. They are muadin from day one. These are not animals that are friendly. These are not animals that it's unusual for them to do damage. That is their normal activity. That's the normal way they engage with society, quote unquote, with other animals, is because they kill them. They're animals that are toreif. They kill other animals to eat, and that's their natural behavior. And therefore, they're mu'ad from day one. If you have an animal like this, you can expect that it's going to do damage from day one. There's no tam. There's no idea that, oh, this is a nice pet to have out in the public. It's helpful. No, it's not like the shvarim that we said before. It's not like the car, quote unquote, that we said before. These are animals where they don't belong on the street. These are animals that are not necessary for you to do, and they are animals that are toreif. So Rav Elazar Meir, Bizman Shein B'nei Tarbut, Ena Muadim. Rav Elazar says they can be domesticated. If these animals are domesticated, then they have the same din as a shor tam. If they're not domesticated, then they don't have a din of a shor tam. But nachash muad le'olam. So Rav Elazar agrees that a nachash can never be domesticated, and therefore a nachash is always considered to be a muad, or injurious, because it never becomes fully domesticated. All right, so now the Gemara says, Mikdani Hashein Mu'edet Le'echol Michlau, Debechatzer HaNizak Askinan. The fact that the Mishnah says that you are obligated to pay for the animal's eating of food that it normally eats, that is Bechatzer HaNizak. Must be that we're dealing with the Chatzer HaNizak. We're dealing in the person's property that was damaged, because in Reshut Rabim, you're not chayav for Shane, because you can expect the animal to eat food in that case. Just as a sidebar, in these cases, when we say that you're exempt from shein, you're exempt from paying for the damage that's done, you still might have to make compensation for the hana'ah, the benefit that the animal got from eating. You may not have to pay the real value of what it ate, because if it ate high-end wheat, that doesn't mean you're going to pay for it. You would have fed it lower-end grains or barley. But if it ate the wheat, you should have to pay or compensate for the fact that your animal now ate, and it does not eat to eat any longer. So when we say your patur minezek means that you don't have to pay for the full damage that's done. So you have to compensate for the value you got, but you don't have to compensate for the damage it did. That's called hana'ata versus nezek. So in these cases, when we say you're patur in Rishut Rabim, it means you're patur from the nezek, but you're not patur from the hana'a that the animal got, because you did get benefit, and you should pay for the benefit that you got. So here it says that the fact that the Mishnah says you're chayav for shein means it must be b'chatzer anizak. Biktani, and then it says, Be'ima enim mu'edet l'shalem kulei, aval chatzi nezek mishalemet. But then it says that the animal in that instance only pays half nezek for those items that it's a tam for, even though you're in chatzer anizak. Mani, who's the author of that position? Rabbanani, that's the position of the Rabbanan. The Amrei, mishune keren b'chatzer anizak, chatzi nezek hu de mishalem. Keren, which is always mishuneh, if it's done even in chatzer anizak, you're only chayav chatzi nezek, not full nezek. That's Rabbanan's opinion, that the distinction between tam and muad is equally applicable in Rishut Rabim as it is in the chatzer ha-nizak. Ema Seifa, what are you going to say about the latter half of the Mishnah? Shor ha-muad v'shor ha-mazik b'shut ha-nizak v'adam and a person. The Mishnah is listing animals that are muad that pay full compensation for the damage they did. One of those examples is a shor ha-mazik b'shut ha-nizak, an animal that does damage in the property of the injured party. So here are examples of mu'ad. Amongst those examples of a mu'ad is the case where he does damage in the chatzer nizak, and there you're paying nezek shalem. Out on the Rabbi Tarfon. That's following the position of Rabbi Tarfon, who says, "Damar mishuneh keren b'chatzer nizak nezek shalem u'de mishalem." Even though keren is mishuneh, the gezeirat ha-katuv is that when you're in the chatzer nizak, you pay full compensation, even though it's keren. The distinction of tam u'ad only applies in Rishut Rabim. Does not apply in the Chatzer Nizak. Reisha Rabbanon, the Sefer Rabbi Tarfon. The first half of the Mishnah is authored by the Rabbanon. The second half of the Mishnah is authored by Rabbi Tarfon. In, Mar says, yes, Eino Chanami. Damar Le Shmuel to Rabbi Yehuda. So this is a similar statement we had from Shmuel to Rabbi Yehuda yesterday. Obviously, the Gemara knows the statement was made in Baba Kama. They don't know where in Baba Kama it was made. Before, they applied it to a Braita that we saw. Now the Gemara is applying it to our Mishnah over here, which is Shinana. Sharp one. Shavuk matnitan v'tabatrai. Leave our Mishnah and come after me. Meaning that don't try to understand the Mishnah. The Mishnah is problematic. And I'll explain it to you. What is that? Reish Rabbanan v'seifa Rabbi Tarfon. The Reish of the Mishnah is the authored by the Rabbanan. The latter half of the Mishnah is authored by Rabbi Tarfon. In other words, we are giving attribution of authorship to two different Tanaim over here. And we're okay with that. V'lozer mishmei the Rav Amar. Thus, Mishnah says, Kula Rabbi Tarfoni. The whole Mishnah is Rabbi Tarfon. And again, as we mentioned yesterday, this is a fundamental machloket as to whether you're comfortable with a Mishnah being two different authors with an easier explanation, or you'd rather have it be a single author with a slightly more difficult explanation. Hashkafically, what are you more comfortable with in the Mishnah? It's clear here that Shmuel is fine with having two authors in the Mishnah because it reads simpler that way. On the other hand, Rabbi Elazar, in the name of Rav, seems to indicate that he'd rather have it be a single author, even though it makes the explanation slightly more difficult, which is Reisha b'chatzer miyuchedet de peirot, le'achad mehen, u'lezeh lezeh l'shvarim. The Reisha is a case where the chatzer was permissible for one of the parties to put his peirot down, meaning the victim here, when he put his peirot down, he had permission to put them there. The other party, the mazik, did not have permission to put his peirot there. And they both have permission for their oxen to be there. As far as Shane is concerned, that's called Chatzer Anizak because you are the only one who has the permission for Peirot. The Mazik does not have permission to put Peirot there. And for Karen, Avya Rishut Rabim. For Karen, it's Rishut Rabim because they both have permission to bring in their Shvarim. Once again, over here, the Balei Tosafot say, similar to what they said in yesterday's daf, that they changed the girsa. Here, too, they changed the girsa to say that it's a case where it's a chatzer miyuchadet the peirot l'achad mehem. One of them has a right to bring in peirot. Ve'lo lazeh, ve'lo lazeh l'shvarim. Neither of them have permission to bring in their shor. The Rabbeinu Tam's problem was if you have permission to bring your shor in, You shouldn't be chayav for eating the fruits of the other guy, because that's an expected outcome. If you have permission to bring your shor there, then by definition, the shor eats, and you can expect him to eat the fruits that are there, and it should be the kulman of Rishut Rabin. Therefore, the Rabbeinu Tam alters the girsa before, and he alters it here again. Therefore, Rabbi Lazar solves the problem by changing the location or the ukimta of the case in the Mishnah in order to allow it to be that Rabbi Tarfon is the author of the ratio of the Mishnah, not only of the Seifa, by saying that it's a chatzer that has properties that make it into a Rishut Rabim for Karen, where Rabbi Tarfon agrees there's a din of Tam, but makes it a Rishut Yachid for Shane, which is why you're Chayav, because it's deemed to be chatzer Hanizak. Okay, we're going to stop over here, four lines down on the top of Tet Zayin Amud Aleph.